listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, listeners, to the B-Fest episode of the Bad Movie Bunny podcast. This time around, I head out to Evanston, Illinois, and prep myself for 24 hours of B-movies. The best of the worst. I couldn't do it alone, needless to say, and I couldn't do it without a few tourist attractions first. B-Fest is a long-standing movie festival held every year at Northwestern University. Often this is held the third week of January, but this year it was mid-February. The event is 24 hours, and attendees will hole up in the auditorium, sleep in common area couches, and spread sleeping bags out on the stage. The frequently asked questions portion of the website advises you to bring pillows, snacks, and flashlights. I personally advise a collapsible pillow for travel, especially by plane. Options other than sugary foods, despite the urge to snack like a kid on a road trip, and I didn't do this. And a charge for your phone, as the flashlight can take up a lot of your battery. This is one of those events where I met up with friends before the show. Our first stop was an area Brazilian steakhouse where I ordered cauliflower steak and somehow out-ate everybody else there. I'm just of the belief that the Midwest wants to feed you. I've seen smaller portions living in Texas, believe it or not. We later head to the Lizardo Museum of Lapidary Art, which housed several gems, mostly jade, and other earth science displays. It's an out-of-the-way spot, but a great way to spend an afternoon. Having taken a red-eye flight, I was exhausted, but I was wired enough to keep going. This hit me as I was able to settle into my hotel room and rest up a bit before we gathered at one of my happy places, the Halakahiki Bar. Tiki bars rank among my favorite places, mostly for atmosphere. Where I live in Texas, there is Hugman's Oasis, who really, really like the skull decor. Halakahiki is a little more mellow, with an outdoor patio that was way too cold to inhabit in February. I would like to visit that one day. Some of us had an impromptu competition for wackiest suit, and a good time and gift shop trip was had by all. For the record, I just wore jeans. I knew I would need to rest and pick up my sugary snacks before the fest. Thankfully, the hotel was near a grocery store, and I was able to walk over after breakfast. I want to say this was the kind of trip where I ate healthy, but I can't. Now, sometimes I can manage this, as a number of restaurants have one or two vegan options to try and cover a variety of dietary needs and restrictions. For a longtime vegetarian, I'm more than okay with this. I didn't think I would lose weight when I went to Orlando a while back, but the one vegan option plan, along with a lot of walking, did it. This was the case for me at the Brazilian steakhouse, but I get to the grocery store and head straight for anything with a lot of caffeine and sugar. Okay, I got a few healthy things to try and balance this out and maintain energy levels, but junk food does prevail at times. The festival arrives, and we pile ourselves and our stuff into any number of cars to head over. Staking out my seat in the auditorium, I take a long walk around the campus both to stretch my legs for the show ahead, but also to get a feel for the area and learn where I'm going. I knew the lay of the land from previous B-Fests for the most part, but I attended sporadically off and on since about 2003, and, you know, universities can undergo any number of changes. While cold, it's a pleasant walk with paved trails and a nice view of the river. So I get back inside before 6 o'clock. The site lists the movies shown, and if one of your friends sponsors a movie, you'll likely know about it beforehand. But do you really know what you're in for? Not always, at least I didn't. And some of what I saw was, something else to say the least. Here's a sampling of what I saw, or rather what I stayed awake for. I always nap through Plan 9 from Outer Space, and kind of did so after the second or third time I saw it. Alright, oh, now for the nitty gritty. The first movie was Stunt Rock. If you like blockbusters such as The Fall Guy, this wasn't for you. But there were stunts, and our hero really wanted to stress to his love interest and the audience as a whole that he does crazy stunts involving zip lines, among other things. Alright, there was a rock band, and he was tasked to do their pyrotechnics because this band has a wizard king and the devil as part of their Spinal Tap / lower key war style act. Both the stuntman hero and the movie needed the exploding cars to keep my interest. It had its funny moments. Next up is Hot Potato. I like Jim Kelly, and really wish he had more of a role in Enter the Dragon as opposed to John Saxon. So needless to say, I was looking forward to Hot Potato, which might be a sequel to Black Belt Jones or be a part of the Black Belt Jones cinematic universe. Either way, it was an action movie that was badly paced, and the kidnapping plot got too convoluted with the target having a double. And for some reason, the sidekick used toys as a kind of low-grade explosive. Kelly did a good job with what he had, and it wasn't until I saw Wonder Woman afterward that this really hit me, and possibly hit a few other attendees as well. Now, Wonder Woman is kind of a James Bond-style movie where you see topless water ballet and hyalai. One athlete in particular kicks this off as he gets kidnapped by pretty possible groupies and taken to an equally hot doctor who has a taste for black market body part resale and transplants. Okay. It brings in a lot of money, and who suspects the pretty girl? The insurance investigator sent to look into this started to suspect a lot of things, but the actor cast in that lead role just wasn't very charismatic, and he wasn't much of a fighter. Alright, at that point I turned to a friend and we agreed that Hot Potato and Wonder Woman needed to switch leading men. Wonder Woman was fun and had a cool premise. Jim Kelly in that lead role would have really made it pop. Now, stick the lead they actually cast in Hot Potato, and it would have just been more meh, but probably a better vehicle for him. As I said earlier, I tend to sleep through Plan 9 and all the fanfare having done it before. I find a suitable couch and manage to camp out for a few hours, or what I thought was a few hours. I missed part of Demonic Toys, and I really didn't want to as it was a full moon movie and a friend sponsored it and I wanted to catch what they chose. Not to mention Charles Brand and Full Moon have a certain hit or miss charm. Spellcaster anyone? Demonic Toys did not cast Adam Ann in this one, but our cannon fodder is a motley crew of criminals and the cops who chase him to a warehouse, which also contains the toys of a demon kid. The toys want to possess one of the cops, or rather her unborn child, so they can bring back the Antichrist. Yeah, just normal night shift shenanigans. This is one of those where the puppetry and stop motion make gruesome but very charming characters. The end result being that the goriest scenes were almost comedic. Well, I laughed my ass off. There was one part where a teddy bear met the business end of a flamethrower and it turned into a killer monster. This was fun on the big screen and I wish I saw the whole movie, especially in light of hard rock zombies. Why the fuck was this greenlit? The premise involves a heavy metal, glammy rock band coming to a small town that was very conservative. Alright, I'm on board so far. The kids in the audience appeared to be malnourished as they were controlled by the conservative adults and parents. So needless to say, some were interested but didn't want autographs. And it turns out the adults were Hitler cultists. Now the band doesn't know, They don't care. They perform anyway, and this is where they lose me. The lead singer flirts with a very pale and timid girl named Cassie, who tells them to stay away from the town. Now, this girl looks to be all of 13, and the band is supposed to be in their 20s, but look well over 30. I was not screaming, but no, 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 and ew, what the fuck was said many times. The lead singer penned Cassie's song, A Love Song. This got performed in the movie, and that scene was portrayed as romantic, and not just, you know, through the perspective of Cassie. There was a whole thing where the cultists murder the band is resurrected by way of a grimoire and Cassie's tears and their creepy song lyrics, and more ghouls were created after the zombie band performs. I ask again, why the hell was this made? Okay, next up was The Chilling. All the sweets in the world couldn't erase that crap. However, The Chilling gave me a chuckle. A cryogenics lab is a front for an organ market. And I guess we'll do anything for a buck. Then again, this lab has a number of wealthy customers. Alright, now I can see it. All the same, the director takes an organ here, an organ there, and sells them off. And too bad, some come back as zombies after lightning strikes, and some poor staff find themselves trapped overnight. There was some B-plot in there and Linda Blair stars. It was okay, solid zombie effects. Next up, a boy and his dog. Part of this I napped through. I came in at maybe less than a third of the way in to see a pre-Miami Vice Don Johnson in a Mad Max ripoff. In a dystopian world, Johnson travels with his telepathic robot dog and tries to find home, shelter, any way out of the desert, and comes across a conservative cult in what looks to be a Norman Rockwell Americana-style enclave. There are reenactments with clown makeup, a robot that kills anyone that deviates from the norm in any way, and a falling out and reunion with Robot Dog. Some dystopian sci-fi movies of the 1970s were very weird in a great way. This was interesting, but not quite the apple. Now, if dystopian sci-fi movies of the 70s going into the 80s were a little weird, some of the musicals can make you feel like you're tripping balls, and The Apple was... oh, wow. It reminded me a little of Xanadu, which I stayed up late to watch or tried to as a little kid, and funnily enough, saw at a B-Fest years later. I didn't fall asleep. However, The Apple was a different visual acid trip. This is a fable about how the corporate music machine is a literal hell where an executive, or the devil, tempt an aspiring folk duo, who are a young couple who are starting to get a little too much attention, and therefore they pose a danger of subverting the machine. Alright, it's time to tempt the woman away with fame, riches, and apples. Yeah, apples. No drugs, orgies, or selling out here. The boyfriend then finds a group of hippies, meets God, gets the girl back. Music is had by all, and no one needs a TV special or a corporate shilling. I got the premise, but those visuals and songs, it was something else. Next up is The Black Scorpion. There is a lot of fun in 1950s sci-fi monster movies. We had earthquakes, volcanoes, and scientists investigating the fallout on a remote ranch run by the pretty heroine. The investigation gets weird when the giant scorpions show up. The creature effects were budget as hell, but very effective, and I enjoyed myself. Which brings us to She Devils on Wheels, and I was waiting for this one. I liked Easy Rider well enough, but I need to see a movie about women's biker clubs, and Herschel Gordon Lewis delivered for a little longer than the movie needed to be. Those women definitely terrorized a Florida town. They partied, they raced, they rode, they recruited. But if someone fell in love with her one-night stand, as one member made the mistake of doing, you were in big trouble with violent repercussions. It was too long, and they had an underage member called Honeypot. Alright, that part is a nope from me. along with how it dragged at the latter end of the movie. Next up is Monkey Hustle. And Yaphet Kotto was really good in this. I'd seen Monkey Hustle at my first B-Fest, and the second time around, I saw more of the slice of life aspects of the movie, just little stories within stories amidst Kotto trying to teach various cons to younger hustlers. I think I enjoyed this more the second time around, but overall, I like this movie a lot. Next up was Arcade, and we are back on the full moon train! I'm ancient enough to remember the concepts behind some of these game systems. So a group of teenagers check out a new arcade game, which is called Dante's Inferno. Yeah, no red flag there. Only to get a free sample demo of the game. Pretty soon, these kids start to disappear. Some of them are depressed, so it wasn't taken too seriously. And it turned out they are trapped in the game, which was programmed with human brain cells. Specifically, the cells of a child that was beaten to death by his mother. Holy shit. Naturally, the program had a problem with this, but the CEO of the company didn't. Are we surprised? As a result, kids get trapped in a game that is harder to finish than any Japanese role-playing game I'm currently stuck on. Octopath Traveler, I am looking at you. Their only hope of release is the programmer and two kids in the group, one of whom is a post-Christmas story Peter Billingsley, and he was pretty good in this. This is a horror movie, and it was pretty dark insofar as how that game was made, but it wasn't gory, and the trapped kids were eventually freed, along with the spirit of the dead kid made into a demon villain. Oops. And to cap it all off, we have Tammy and the T-Rex. It comes across as a kid movie by some turns, and this is due to the goofy performances. I mean, for fuck's sake, the brain of a murdered kid was transplanted into an animatronic dinosaur, and he subsequently comes back to his love interest, eventually learns how to communicate, and together terrorize high school bullies and mad scientists who, for whatever reason, have animatronic dinosaurs hanging around. Alright, as far as teen romantic comedies go, this is the kind I would choose over the usual fare of the genre, because you cannot go wrong with T-Rexes. After that, the fest comes to a close, and oh my god, we were exhausted. It turned out that the fest ran past the 24-hour mark, and it seems more and more people want to sponsor movies. Oh, shit, even I have a list of candidates. I don't know if I'll ever put it together or submit it. But this was a good year for bad movies. And with that, I am signing off on this episode of the Bad Movie Bunny Podcast. Episodes and more blog content can be found at www.badmoviebunnies.com, as well as on Blue Sky as Bad Movie Bunnies. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time.